Yeah, got it. I need the red button. All righty. Yes, it's been happening. Tom's been on the couch since the 8th of October. We've asked you, the listeners, to send in songs to bring Tom through the door. Let's see. This is Taylor from Tacoma, who's got this one. I want to be the Proclaimer. Is that what it is?
I'm going to be by the Proclaimer.
Oh, by the... I'm going to be. All right. Play that in a second, but I was listening to this song on the way in, so I'll play this one instead. Even if it ain't all it seems, I got a pocket full of dreams, baby. Hey, Tommy.
Song, how does that relate to me?
Not at all.
Even better.
Get your ass back in here. Diamond in you! There we go. I was coming in to work today, and I heard that song. That's a Alicia Keys, and that, God, yeah. I love that song. Oh, something about it. Anyway, just thought I'd play one for me. We'll take care of Taylor from Tacoma's tomorrow. By the way, tomorrow we've got people that have paid $15,000 to come in and watch us do the show, so I'm going to give myself a nose enema. Jacob will be doing that. The enema came from Amazon yesterday, and I opened it up. There's absolutely no instructions, so that's good. Kind of leaving it up to your imagination. Question is, will you be in tomorrow? Take the music out for 1 second.
We.
Enchanté. All right, that means, yes, Tom is coming in tomorrow. All right, then Tommy... You also will be involved in the nose enema. All right? I don't know That's how this right. hot started. Oh, by the way, thinking your thing's not getting started or getting started, we are very close to getting our Dutch oven T-shirts. Okay? A lot of exciting things happening. All right, Tom, let's get to it. Here we go, Seattle.
By the way, that yes. song is by Jay-Z. I mean, Alicia Keys was part of it, but that's a Jay-Z song.
She does it better than Jay-Z.
Well, she does. She did the bridge. And then Jay-Z
comes in and ruins it. He comes in and ruins it.
Well, okay.
All right.
Fair enough.
How about the irony of this? The Seattle Suns, is that possible? The Phoenix Suns, which is described as one of the worst franchises by ESPN and one of the worst owners of all franchises, ESPN gave the award to the owner, I think, in 2016 or 17. They really haven't done much. They got the number one pick, and they would like to be able to renovate the arena down there. And the owner, who apparently doesn't have a very good relationship with the community, has come to them and said, listen, guys, if you don't help out and pick up some of this money and help fix up this stadium, I might end up leaving. And the, let's see, Phoenix Suns president, Jason Rowland, tried to clamp down on the rumors, taking the team to another city. He says,
So this is where I would simply say, you know, my dad used to say, the imagination gallops and the truth goes on foot, all right? The reality is that we have made...
Ooh, that's a good one, Tom. Did you get that?
Yep.
Okay.
Zero threat about going to any other city. Forget
even Seattle?
Yep. The ones that you've mentioned.
Where did that come from?
I have no idea where that came from. Is it a well-known fact that the city of Seattle is putting $700 million into Key Arena? It's a well-known fact. Is it a well-known fact that the city of Las Vegas is actively trying to attract a Major League Baseball team? They're actively trying to attract an NBA team? No question about it. But that is not coming from us. We are not making those threats. We are focused on this town, this city, downtown Phoenix, and getting our deal done. If you think about it logically, why would we be making those threats when we're in the midst of trying to get a deal done for the last 3 years? It doesn't logically make any sense. So where that came from, I don't know. But I can sit here and tell you with 100% certainty, Robert Sarver's primary objective is to get a deal done here in downtown Phoenix.
Okay, so that's what the president right. says. What didn't the owner say,
yeah,
give me the money or I leave?
Listen to what he just said. Robert Sarver's, the owner's primary focus is getting, you know, what he wants here in Phoenix. Of course that's its primary. The story is not that he wants to leave Phoenix. Mm-hmm. He's saying in the course of our 3 years of negotiations, I want the city of Phoenix to pick up $150 million of the $230 million that's going to be needed to renovate the arena that we play in.
Yeah.
Well, clearly, that's and it's the owner who said that to the Arizona Republic, unless you think the Arizona Republic is making this stuff up. It was the owner, and of course it can be used as a bargaining chip. This guy, you know, who, I don't know if he's the CEO or what his official status is, but it's like, he's trying to tamp down something that he realized got out of control, and maybe they didn't have their messages straight. But it's clearly a threat, mm-hmm. and it's clearly directed at Phoenix. And yes, of course, he'd rather stay in Phoenix. But if he doesn't get what he wants them to know that, listen, I've got two other cities just salivating at the mm-hmm. chance to get this franchise.
Well, I had read that the NBA does not think much of this owner, that he's held in some of the lowest regard by other owners. And yeah. the people in Phoenix don't really like him very much. And I saw the one compromise was rather than asking the city to pay, you know, two thirds and then you pay the additional third, why not flip that around like they did in Salt Lake City and you pick up a greater percentage of it and then let the city, if they want to pay part of it, they're going to pay part of it, let them pick up the smaller portion of the percentage to do to fix up the thing. And that would show that, like, look, I put some of my money up. He's a billionaire and it benefits the city, but it also benefits him. So just flip the numbers around and you'll be able to agree. But it always seems strange that Seattle becomes the possibility. Yeah. I'm leaving. I'm going to Seattle.
Right. Although, you know, it's the Seattle Times did this. I heard Danny, Dave, and Moore yesterday mm-hmm. talking a lot about this. So let's imagine. So right now, I think the chances of Phoenix Suns moving up here, you know, maybe, you know, 10% at most. I mean, I don't think it's nearly as close as, say, the Sacramento Kings were to moving up here, however many years ago that was, 5, 6, 7 years ago. However, if it was offered, would you want it? I heard Danny O'Neill was talking about the fact that as huge an NBA fan as he is, and as much as he wanted the Sacramento Kings to move up here, mm-hmm. he just thinks now that I don't want to steal a team from another city like I thought I did. And he says, I would feel bad about that. That's not even, factoring in the account, if you're correct, John, that this owner is considered, you know, in contempt by a lot of, people. That just, he didn't know if he would feel that good about it. And then Dave Wyman on the show asked him, he says, yeah, but what if you knew, because right now the NBA is not talking about expansion, what if you knew that we'd never get a replacement for like another decade? Then would you be willing to consider taking on the Suns? And Danny said he didn't think so. Would you like it if the Suns actually did make this threat and Phoenix City Council didn't follow through? Would you openly embrace Danny O'Neill dubs them, the Seattle Supersonics?
Oh, that's good. I would probably go to the games. I'd hold my nose for a little while, and then you can only hold it so long. I love NBA basketball. I would love to see giant stars come to Seattle. But you have to realize that this guy, this is the type of individual, and this is the sort of character where he holds the gun to the head of the taxpayers. Give me what I want or I'm leaving. Now we're going to, we welcome you. You're welcoming that type of character to this city who's now going to start to, well, you know what, guys? I might be heading, you know what? I'll take this team. I'm going to go to Milwaukee. Or go some other place. Now, because he's already shown us the type of person he is. Now we're just negotiating over the salary. So now we know who you are, and you want that kind of person in Seattle. I don't think you do. That's the one great thing about the now deceased Paul Allen. The guy was a straight-up shooter as to the fact that he loved football. He bought the team, didn't know if it was going to be working out for us. But it was a gift to to Seattle. And then he put wonderful people in there and delivered two trips to the Super Bowl, or three anyway. So we end up with a good owner that has a big heart that understands the city. That's the kind of individual one. Let's wait and find. Let's expand the NBA and be able to have a team just as great as the Seattle Storm here in Seattle. Let that grow naturally as opposed to, you know, being somebody's sloppy second.
I'm sort of with you, although I wonder how jealous we'll feel if Las Vegas Suns open up in 2022.
You know what? Go ahead. You're living in Las Vegas. Enjoy.
A lot of people do.
Oh, that is the worst city.
Is it? But I mean, they're getting an NFL franchise.
I feel fine. Good. So gross down there. All right. Let's see. Do you care? Want to talk about the stadium or not? You want to do that or not? You done with sports talk? Okay, yeah, it's 2 minutes. We'll put 2 minutes on the clock on this one. Here we go. So whose stadium is it anyway? Danny Westney writes a piece in the Seattle Times because, of course, if you've driven by Safeco Field, you've noticed there's no name out there anymore. Big Cranes came along and took away all the letters, and now we're waiting to find out who gets the naming rights. It, to the Mariners, I think they get anywhere between $55 million and $100 million. Is that right, Tom?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
So Danny says, if it's our stadium, if we built it and we rent it to you for a ridiculously low price, shouldn't the city get, or King County get, some of the money from the naming rights?
So, yeah. So basically his pitch is that he thinks that the Mariners got a sweetheart deal by tricking us or convincing us, the taxpayers, to throw in $135 million into upkeep. They're also paying, the Mariners are also paying for some of it. And one of the arguments the Mariners were making is, hey, you guys own the stadium, you know? I mean, it's like your responsibility for that. He said, well, if we own the stadium, we ought to bloody well get the naming rights a fee, or at least a portion of it. And that was part of the early negotiations when the Mariners were dealing with the city about, well, maybe we would get an aspect of it. And they ended up dropping it, and he just thinks that that's ridiculous. And he says right now he's afraid that the rumor is that T-Mobile may be the company that gets the naming rights, and he just thinks it's a soul-deadening name like T-Mobile Field. So he's just proposing in this kind of a silly way that he says, you know, maybe we just ought to screw whatever they want to say the title of it is. We ought to call it something else. And his proposal is, because of what T-Mobile does, don't give T-Mobile any credit. Just call it the Cell, as an indication of the felonious performance of the baseball team and all that. So it's just kind of a crack at his expense. Like, yeah, is there any way we can fight back to resist the naming rights of benefiting the team and or the company paying for the rights?
All right. Let's see, to the fact that Donald Trump's guy, Michael Cohen, came out and said that to break the law, claims Cohen pleaded guilty to and embarrassed the president. This is Trump's tweets coming out against Cohen. It was interesting. My brother told me that he was talking to a friend of his who's very smart. The guy says, I actually feel sorry for Michael Cohen. So he goes, wait a minute. The guy was a sleazebag, and he took whatever money he could to do different things. And my brother told me the story about a guy that had a deposition, an attorney that did a deposition with Cohen and Trump. He says the guy was like he was the muscle man for Trump. This is not from the deposition, but this is the sort of stuff that he would do. So let's say Trump owed somebody, I don't know, $1 million. It would be Cohen that would go to the guy and say, hey, listen, I'm telling you right now, he ain't going to give you $1 million. You should take the $30,000 and that'll be it. Because if not, I'm going to be your worst effing nightmare. I'm coming all after you. We're going to sue the hell out of you. So just, you know what? Take the 30 and be happy. Then he'd come back and tell Trump, hey, I got him down to 30. You know, so that this is the sort of guy he was. And now he's coming out saying, oh, no, I had to do this because I was dirty. And then I finally decided I would wake up and morally my soul would be clean by I would come forward and tell everybody about all the horrible things that Donald Trump did.
I don't know why. Yeah, I mean, the thing is there you can be of two minds of about Michael Cohen, and the judge sort of indicated that he was of two minds. He does get credit for finally coming clean. That's true, and that's all well and good.
Okay.
But that doesn't excuse a decade or more of crimes that he committed. And it was interesting. I saw a former federal prosecutor on and said, where's all this sympathy coming for Michael Cohen? He says this guy would berate people. He would shake down people.
Yeah.
He was this fixer. He would threaten people. He'd yell at the press. Everything that he did was antagonistic. And he says, and he gets 3 years. 3 years is nothing. You get 3 years for all sorts of, crimes that are much less egregious than what he did. And yet suddenly, because he's, fessing up now, after a year, a lifetime of crime to confess to a couple because you got caught, by the way. It's not like all of a sudden he says, you know what, I have these pangs of conscience. I'm going to change my life. He's changing his life because he got caught red-handed.
Right.
And if it's a real personal conversion, that's good. I'm all for it. He was very teary in court yesterday. I assume those were the tears of remorse, but I also think they're probably tears of also, well, you know, woe is me, sorry me.
Right.
And he's getting off relatively lightly. So, you know, I'm glad he's finally coming clean, but I'm also glad that he's getting something of a prison sentence, at least.
I guess they're going to get him. They got him on the tax stuff. They got him on lying to a bank in order to get a mortgage, right? What they're going to try to do is say, hey, Trump told you to write a check for $130,000 and give it to this woman that apparently he had an affair with, was hush money. But the thing was, is that if you look at how they set this thing up, the Federal Election Campaign Act says that it's an expenditure is anything for the purpose, payment, loan, advance deposit or gift of money or anything of value for the purpose of influencing an election for federal office. So, but then the question is, Trump already had, prior to before him announcing he was going to be a candidate, I think she was coming after him and wanted the money. So he had this expenditure prior to him starting to run. So therefore, it's not an expenditure with inside the bounds of a campaign. It was presented to him earlier, and it just, at this point, he then paid her off during the campaign. So it wasn't...
Well,
so, no, he would have had that expense whether he ran or not. She was coming after him whether he ran or not. So it's the same way if you're not a candidate.
Yes.
Right. So if you're not a candidate, or let's say you are a candidate. So 1 year you're not a candidate and you buy a suit because you want to have a nice suit. But then the next year you say, well, I want to look good while I'm out on the campaign trail. I'm campaigning. I'm going to buy this suit so that I look good. So that's going to be an expenditure. And I'm going to wear a nice suit because, in effect, this nice suit is going to influence the election because I look good, or I brush my teeth, I got a nice haircut. All of those expenses that are occurring during the campaign are not considered part of your campaign expenditures, because if you normally have those expenses outside of the campaign, haircuts and suits and everything else, it's not protected as an expenditure during the campaign. So he had this expense prior to the campaign, and he wrote the check for $130,000. If he hadn't run, he'd still owe her the money, Tom.
Okay, first off, it sounds like you're buying hook, line, and sinker the Trump's defense. But the reason that defense
I'm not defining. I'm arguing whether or not it was an expenditure to influence the campaign. He had the expense prior to him running, correct?
Well, I don't know. I don't think so, because it wasn't paid until after he got the nomination. What's interesting about this is that sounds like BS in retrospect, because Michael Cohen says that he did it at the direction of the president to influence the outcome of the election. And I know that Michael Cohen is on record as being a liar, and so that's not verifiable proof. But now they have David Pecker, the head of AMI, which was runs the National Enquirer. He also says that, yes, he paid $150,000 for the rights to McDougal's story in order to squelch that story to affect to have a positive effect on the election outcome of Donald Trump. So you've got two people saying that it wasn't just, we were going to pay it. It just happened to come up during the campaign. Two people now are on record saying
that they did that. When was the 150? When was the 150 to the Playmate? When was that first brought up? Prior to him,
I don't know when it was first brought up. When it was paid,
it doesn't matter. I'm not talking about when
it's paid.
It's when the expense. No, when the expense occurs,
it matters.
No, it matters, because when the expense occurs,
yes.
If he did not run, he would still owe the 150. If he did not run, he'd still owe 130. So it's an expense prior to him running.
No,
he had the expense.
National Enquirer coordinated with the Trump campaign to squelch that story for the election. So that, I don't know when the actual payment happened.
When did the
expense
occur?
Trump denied the expense. He said, I don't know, it has nothing to do with me. It was all Michael Cohen's doing. And then Michael Cohen said, no, it doesn't. So he's trying to have it both ways, saying, I didn't pay for it. And then, I did, and I paid for it early. Both those people say he did it as part of the campaign. That makes it a campaign finance.
You'd have to find it when the expense occurs. Sesame Street's got a brand new Muppet. Plus, also, we'll get to the fact that free office snacks, you think it's going to be a good idea. Apparently, it's one of the worst things you can do for a company. Did I overstate that to sell that? Sorry. Look at my back. All righty, here we go. Laura's Home Loans. Laura Keel, thanks a lot for sponsoring the Tom and Curly Show. You get in touch with Laura. Laura's Home Loans, 833-ASK-LAURA, 833-ASK-LAURA. And any of your mortgage needs can be met immediately by the good people working at Laura's Home Loans. All right. So it is true, Tom comes back tomorrow. Are we going to do something special for him?
No.
What do you mean, no?
Please don't.
Why not?
I want to slink in and slink out.
You have a giant leg brace on. I don't think slinking is the verb normally associated yeah, with giant leg braces. Right. All right. Well, I say that because talk is cheap. We wouldn't do anything for you. We didn't even call you when you were home.
That's all right.
I kept sitting in Jacob. How's Tom doing? I don't know.
Yeah. Shrug of the shoulders.
Okay. Well, dog is in tomorrow. Well, you'll be in here tomorrow. It's a big deal because we got these people paid all this money to see us do the show. And of
that's
course,
right.
We've got the nose enema that's going to be occurring. We have decided Jacob stands up on top of a chair and holds the rubber bag with the saline solution and distilled water in it. And then the tube is inserted into my nose. And then, Tom, you will hold the garbage can as the water pours out my other nostril. Okay?
Oh, how could I miss that?
Actually,
maybe
you have
I
to
will.
Sit, right? You're sitting. So we'll put the can on Tom's lap.
How about
that?
On my head?
The more explicitly you describe it, the more concerned I become for your safety.
Oh, it's going to be fine. What's the worst thing that can happen? Seriously.
Death.
No, you can't die from that.
What do you mean? We just
that was eating an amoeba.
I know.
All right, here we go. Amazon.
Jacob and I will be accomplices to murder.
Amazon aims at office workers with a compact cashless food store. They set up a little one a couple of years ago, and I remember GeekWire did a story on it. You went in, cameras watch what you take, and then you walk out. So they've set this thing up. Now you have your phone as you scan through like a subway turnstile. You have your phone there. Once the computer recognizes your phone and who you are on Amazon, it opens up. You go in, take whatever you want, simply walk back out again. So they're going to put these things, these little mini stores, about 450 square feet in a whole bunch of different spots. That's the plan anyway, right, Tom?
Yeah, so this is a smaller, you know, you talked about the Amazon Go store that they opened here in Seattle. Now they got a couple around the country. Those are, I mean, they may be small compared to, you know, like a Safeway, but they're talking now, this latest thing is even smaller, 450 square feet. And it sounds like all they're really going to, sell are salads and snacks. And the idea is it's for like office workers and the like. And they say what's significant about this is, they'll be able to sort of broaden their footprint in the brick and mortar world by placing these things very conveniently in office lobbies, you know, on communal floors, perhaps a hospital. It's such a tiny format that you can just sort of set up your own shop in a very limited space. And once again, they'll be able to, grab more business from us. This latest one that's opening up, the experimental, it's on the sixth floor of the Macy's building here downtown Seattle. It's only open to Amazon employees. But the idea is that they are shrinking the availability, but the convenience of not having to pay for once you tap in with your phone, so to speak, is seen as a big moneymaker for Amazon.
So we'll pay for what we want there, but imagine if you got free food and you worked for one of the tech companies, whether in Silicon Valley or in Seattle. There was a survey that was done in The Hustle. They wanted to find out, I think it's called the Freshman 15, right, Tom? You go to college.
Right.
Normally women, I guess it's women, maybe men as well, put on 15 pounds because they're going to the cafeteria. Maybe they're not moving around as much and they're eating more and they're drinking more, taking in more calories. So it's known as the Freshman 15. So The Hustle right. decided they wanted to do a test. So they went to 100 tech companies and they talked to the employees, all of them, and they found out that almost 70% of them say after starting to work at one of these tech companies, they had gained weight anywhere between 5 pounds and 25 pounds within a year.
Wow. Yeah, so the idea here, the free office snacks, a terrible idea.
Yeah.
The argument, why would you start offering it for free? Well, first off, it was seen as kind of a lure to get people, oh, look at this. You can eat all you want. And
right.
They would hire chefs and all. And the idea is that it was also meant to kind of create a bond with people that randomly would meet in the cafeteria and they would, you know, start talking and all this. And that would be good for company morale. So there was a philosophy behind the idea.
Mm-hmm.
But it says what it's mostly become now is free snacks, that they're no longer doing the, you know, the big kind of hiring. A chef to actually cook good food. Instead, they're just snacks. They're free, and that's all well and good if you think that it's going to encourage morale. But they say what they notice is that the snacks are not healthy snacks, that most of what you consume, like most snacks are not good for you, and
yep.
It's bad health policy for the millennials mostly who are working in these places. This article is arguing against it, and they say, but if you want to still keep this idea of free food as somehow a cohesive aspect of your company, then why not issue something like a credit card that it's paid for by the company, but you get discounts when you're buying things like vegetables, and also you're encouraging healthy eating and charging double, say, on this free credit card for the snacks, and that would discourage people from eating the wrong kinds of things.
Oh, right.
But basically, this great aspect of millennial tech culture is worse for people and the company than it is good.
So in order to maintain and then also to poach from one place to another and get your employee, because it costs a certain amount of money to have to go out and replace that employee, they just simply want to be able to offer all this stuff. The number one things being offered that are free are chips and baked goods and Luna bars. free lunch from restaurants and catering as well. There's lots of Goldfish crackers. There is some smoked salmon, some bagel, and some cream cheese. But most people eat the junk that's there, M&Ms and things like that. The problem is, why don't you do this? Rather than offering free food, because it's not free, it's coming out of the company budget, why don't you give everybody, hey, everybody, I remember my dad did this. Does everybody want new carpeting downstairs in customer service, or would everybody like $80 in their paycheck for the next 2 weeks? And everyone's like, we'll take the $80. So the carpeting was awful, but who cared? They would rather have the money on their own. See, you'd get the tech company say, you want free food, which costs us X amount of dollars a year, and the average person puts on 4 pounds, and we don't provide any gym or any free this or free that. Would you rather have that, or would you rather have the free food, or would you rather have an additional $10 every 2 days in your paycheck? Be interesting to see what people choose.
This very article makes that very same suggestion. They say, but if that doesn't seem as in the spirit of why you're initially offering the free food, they propose this credit card idea. But they say, and not only does it affect their physical, it's sort of like a physical impairment that the company is encouraging. It also says junk food, negatively affects cognitive performance.
Right.
These guys, you're actually hurting your own. It'd be like offering free beer and then expecting people to be able to work as efficiently. So it looked great on paper, but the practical effects are negative.
We don't have it here.
Well, we do now. Be fair though, they do offer free coffee,
right?
I mean, that's something.
It's awful.
And and cocoa, and I mean, there are some free things back there, and I think people would miss the coffee if it wasn't there, whether it's bad or not.
Oh, it's so terrible, but it's like, oh, it's free.
Well, it's true. But we didn't get to this last story, the rise of robots. And one of the things they said is that with more robots doing the menial jobs, it may make coffee obsolete, because most of us who get to work that need coffee to get our day going, if the robots are always doing those menial affairs, maybe coffee will no longer be of much value to us.
Fast break, come back. We'll talk about the fact that Americans are weirdly obsessed with this, although most of us have it in our kitchen and we use it at least 3 or 4 times a day. Right back. All righty, here we go. You write to us online, Trading Academy text line 98973. Online, Trading Academy text line 98973. Ursa, how are you preparing for the return of Tom?
With bated breath.
Well,
I can't wait.
Of course, I know, right?
Yeah, honestly. I've missed you, Tom. I miss your positive energy.
Well, hey, listen, the more positive I am, I just want everyone to ignore the fact that I haven't been there for 2 months. I don't want John to make some big deal about
it. I'm
this.
Not.
Oh, trust me, he won't.
Believe me, I won't.
I know. That's the only thing I like about John.
He might let you have a swig of his kombucha over there, but.
No way. I'm going to put that in my nose enema. All right, here we go. Ursa's waiting with bated breath for your return, Tom. The Americans are weirdly, weirdly obsessed with paper towels. The story in The Atlantic, and if you go on YouTube, you can watch a whole bunch of people posting a whole bunch of crap that's like 500 people watch, probably mostly relatives, of them going on and on and on about, please stop using paper towels and what it's doing to the planet and to the rest of us. And if you just get yourself a pretty decorative basket.
That I really liked, and a matching fruit bowl. And I decided that I would use it as my napkin holder. So I bought these really cute bar towels, and they're actually the perfect size to use as a napkin.
Yeah, so everyone seems to be on the bandwagon to no longer be using paper towels.
Yeah, well, what's I had no idea. The United States is responsible for half $12 billion sales of paper towels. We spend as much money on paper towels as all the other countries in the world combined.
Good.
And I had no idea that we did that so much. And so they were saying, so why is that? Well, a lot of it has to do with how darn rich we are, mm-hmm. John, that we can afford pay for non-essentials like paper towels. That's mm-hmm. funny. I think of a paper towel as like an essential part of our life, but it's how middle class that really is. That most people around the world use brooms, mops, and rags. In other words, things that are reusable. And each culture has a different thing that they rely on more. They say scrubbing brushes are big in Latin America, cloth towels in the Middle East, sponges in Europe. So it's not that the whole world operates the same way. It's just that they use things that are reusable. And if they're reusable, they're cheaper, and so more people can afford them. And then secondly, they're more environmentally helpful because, as the quote in the article says, that things that are disposable are just anything disposable isn't good for the environment. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the problems, that we take advantage of the fact that we can afford them, but we probably aren't doing the environment any good. But still, we have an over-reliance on paper towels.
Doesn't mean you need a full-size paper towel to do it. Bounty Select-A-Size. Each sheet is 45% smaller.
Yeah, see, that's a genius move. They make the little, it's perforated so it's smaller now.
But it's 100% Bounty. Lab tests prove that when wet.
Lab tests, by the way.
Our small sheet is stronger than that full-size sheet.
Yeah.
So try the paper towel that cleans small spills with less waste. Select Bounty Select-A-Size. The smaller, quicker picker-upper.
So my Nazi liberal in-laws have a rule that they had paper towels there, but you're not allowed to use them. Lace went to go visit them in Boston at Christmas time, and all of her paper towels she stuck in her pockets. So when she came home, she took all the paper towels that she had used and stuffed in her pockets to hide. She ended up throwing them out here in Seattle.
By the way, the suggestion is to rinse them out and reuse them.
Oh,
they're
okay.
Good for a couple of uses.
Okay.
Ridiculous.